Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Voice of Indie. Your hosts today are Beam Weeks, author, producer, and marketing monster for independent multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group, and Stephen Gies, author, producer, composer, and publisher for Fresh Ink Group.
Greetings and good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Voice of Indie podcast, episode number 44. I am your host, Beam Weeks, and with me is my co-host, Stephen Gies. How you doing tonight, Stephen?
I'm doing great. I'm excited about tonight's show. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. It's almost summer. It's summer in the air, but it's not quite summer yet, but it may as well be. We're looking at 80s, and here we got in a few days, we're looking at 90-degree weather.
So, wow.
And I don't like it that hot, but I would rather have it that than 20 below zero. So I'm not complaining.
Well, it's starting to rain here. We've got thunderstorms and lightning moving in, and it's kind of weird because, you know, I was never a guy who was into birds, but since I've moved down here to Alabama and live on the edge of a lake, a huge lake, 212 square mile lake, we've got bald eagles and giant great herons and just all kinds of cool stuff to look at. But we've got gourds hanging over the boathouse, which purple martins live in, and they get all the mosquitoes. You can see them out there. They're like dive bombers, just getting them all. So I can go out and sit on the deck at dusk working on my computer and never see a mosquito. And then as far as spiders and stuff, we have Carolina wrens that build nests all around here, and then they constantly patrol the deck. And if a spider dares build a web, a wren's going to get him pretty soon, and I'm happy about that. But I've got flowers in pots out here, and right outside the door, I've got a hibiscus with some little flowering plants all around it. And the Carolina wrens have built a nest right in the middle of that flower pot. So now when it starts raining like it is now, I'm worried about my Carolina wren sitting out there on her eggs thinking, what was she thinking? You know, but apparently they know what they're doing, and she's just sitting there in the rain, keeping those eggs warm. So more power to her.
Yeah. We had a flower pot here, three summers ago, I guess that was, now hanging up on the back deck. Now there's an overhang, so the rain didn't get into it, but a robin built her nest in there and laid her a single egg, hatched it, and then we had this little baby chick out there, and then eventually it just flew off. So I mean, it was kind of neat to watch the process, but kind of ruined the plant because we couldn't get out there to water it or anything, but that's all right.
Yeah, I'm watering this hibiscus at the outer edge and just thinking, well, okay, she must have known what she was doing. But, you know, we get, right now it's the time for all of our wood ducks. We have wood duck boxes and they all have babies. So they're out there cruising around, followed by little strings of babies, and the Canada geese all have babies. And the woman next door had a big flower pot on her boathouse porch, and the flower in it died. So it was just a pot sitting there. And this year the Canada geese built a nest in her flower pot. So we've got, and boy, those Canada geese, they get up in the yard and start eating your grass, and you go down there to chase them off. And if they've got babies, you're going to have to get past that male goose. And
yeah,
that's not an easy thing to do. Those can be mean fish.
They're territorial big time.
Yep. So anyway, for this, before we get into this week's show, I've got three announcements to talk about. One is good news. Way back in the day, at the University of Michigan, I did two bachelor's degrees at the same time. One was psychology, one was English language and literature. Hadn't intended to do the second one, but a professor approached me one day and gave me some of the best advice I ever got in my life, and that was, you should do both. And I said, well, you know, I'm taking a lot of English classes, but I wasn't planning on doing a degree in it. And he said, listen, there is nothing that you can do in life that you won't do better and more successfully if you're a good communicator. He said, get the English degree too. And it's ironic now because all these years later, I'm a publisher. I never expected that my life would go that direction, but it did. But at any rate, back then, for the psychology degree, we used to have to do practicums, set up programs out in the community that college students could go out and participate in. And I set up things like tutoring programs and low-income housing developments, and you know, go out there and teach the adults how they can help the kids and things like that. And one that I started doing my second year of college was going into prisons and teaching writing classes. And I wound up doing that for many years and wound up, you know, meeting some wonderful people and helping nurture some talent. And some of those people have gone on and done some stuff with that. Well, one of my first students was a young artist named Ray Gray. And he was more interested in doing the art, but he wanted to learn about writing. But he was a painter, a prison painter, and he was remarkably talented. So I wound up hiring him to do a couple of book covers way back in the day and to do some artwork for our websites. We used to have an old Joomla-based website a long time ago, and he did a lot of the artwork for that. Now, Ray Gray was convicted of killing a drug dealer in a drug house in Detroit. And one time he sent me his file, and I looked through it, and I agreed it was a bogus case. It was a lying witness, and nothing made sense, and, you know, everything about it was just, it was a bad conviction. And he spent a lot of years fighting that. He wound up getting married to a woman who spent her savings hiring lawyers and trying to work on it. And at any rate, this was kind of a lost cause because he was doing life without parole, and not very many people were sympathetic to him. Well, I just saw today that the new prosecutor in Detroit reviewed his case, and she decided it was a bogus case. So they cut a deal and made it so that they went and picked him up and brought him into court, cut this deal, and told him, you're going home this afternoon. So he walked out of prison after 48 and a half years just a few days ago. And he was locked up when Nixon was president. I mean, it's just kind of hard to imagine something like that. And now the guy, when I saw him on the news, and when they handed him a cell phone and said, you know, your niece couldn't be here today, she wants you to call her. And he's standing there looking at that cell phone like, what do I do? You know, what is this thing? You know, it's like I've seen TV commercials for these, but I don't know how to operate one. But anyway, Ray Gray was one of our first artists with Fresh Ink Group, and he is now a free man after 48 and a half years. And we want to congratulate him and wish him the best for the rest of his life. Go, Ray Gray. You deserve it.
Yeah, welcome to the world, Ray.
Yeah, welcome to the world. And I mean, even if he had been guilty, you know, 48 and a half years, yeah, it seems like at some point, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the second thing I wanted to talk about was way back in the day, Fresh Ink was originally set up as Fresh Ink Literary Management. And it was because I had a couple of book deals, and I had a friend who had a book deal. And it turns out that when you have book deals and you have agents and things like that, there's a lot of administration, dealing with phone calls, paperwork, you know, all those kinds of things. So I hired a young woman named Ann Stewart to be the manager of Fresh Ink. And Ann stayed with us for decades, long after we turned it into a publisher, Fresh Ink Group. And she ran things. And boy, did she run things. She was
yes,
tight.
She did.
She kept everything going. And basically, I just let her manage me. Tell me what you need and when you need it, you know, and I'll do
she
my part.
She was the brains of the outfit, let's put it that way.
Yeah, she was the one who went out there and learned how to do a lot of stuff that we didn't know how to do. You know, and brought it back to us. And she was just a wonderful woman, a sweetheart, a Texas gal down there in the Dallas area. Every year she'd go out with her husband to Hill Country and send me pictures of the blue bonnets in bloom, because that was her favorite thing. And unfortunately, about 5 years ago, we lost Ann unexpectedly. She had had an aversion to doctors all of her life. And her husband has talked to me about this a number of times. He could just never get her to go to a doctor. And she'd always, it'll be okay, or whatever. And when they got to their age 50, he started scheduling colonoscopies every 5 years, and he could never get her to go. Well, then about 15 years later, she was having severe cramps and pain and whatnot, and she was supposed to have a Skype meeting with me, and she sent me an email saying, I need to postpone today's meeting. I'm just not feeling well. I'm going to have my husband take me to the emergency room. And that was the last time I ever heard from her. Because when she got to the emergency room, they said, oh, man, this is bad. They gave her a CAT scan and said that she was stage 4 colon cancer. Her entire colon was basically gone. And they wound up doing emergency surgery, took out her colon, took out half her liver, lymph nodes, I think pancreas and some other things, took out her bladder and basically said, look, we couldn't even try to get it all. We just got this much, and, you know, we're going to recommend you go to hospice. And she wound up doing hospice in her own home, but she was in really bad pain and drugged and really couldn't communicate very well. And anyway, she only lasted a couple of weeks. And now she's gone and we miss her and we think about her. We talk about her. We keep noticing how much what we do was influenced by her or that she taught us how to do or whatever. And, it's hard to lose somebody like that, no matter what the circumstances. But yesterday was her birthday. And today I called her husband again because I talk to him every now and then. And he spent 4 hours on the phone with me today. He talked about a lot of personal stuff and he talked about the end of life for her and whatnot. And it was kind of a hard conversation sometimes. But he believes in his heart that if she had been going and getting those colonoscopies with him, that they'd have caught it early when it was some polyps or something like that. They could deal with it, but that she waited too long. So I had said to him something like, well, we're going to mention on the podcast tonight, shout out to Ann and how much she meant to us. And he said, do me a favor, tell your listeners when they get to that age, get a colonoscopy. It's not fun, but it's something that you need to do. And I noticed that the guidelines have been lowered now to 45 instead of 50. They're recommending you start at age 45. That happened right after Chadwick Boseman, the movie star, died at 43 of colon cancer. They lowered that age and said people should start doing them. So I'm here to tell you that Ann's husband, Bill, asked me to tell all of you, if you're at that age, don't put it off. Go find out while you got time to do something.
Yeah, and I want to just interject here. I got a colonoscopy when I turned 50, and that's one of those you're thinking, oh, man, I don't want to do this. And it's just the whole rigmarole that, surrounds it. And it sounds scarier than it really is, I can tell you that. And it's if they catch anything, if they find something, they find it earlier, your chances of survival is a lot better. With me, they found nothing. Completely clean, good situation. But as Stephen just pointed out, had Ann not had that aversion and had gone in, she probably would still be here working with us. And it's interesting that he brought her up, today on this program. And we talked about this a little bit before tonight's show. But here a few days ago, I did some spring cleaning, and I had some drawers here in the office that were packed with papers and notebooks and things like that, that I needed to clean out and make some space for some other stuff. And I found a notebook going back about a decade when I first started doing work for Fresh Ink Group. I was doing editing, but I was also doing, as Stephen pointed out, the Joomla website, which is completely different from the site we're doing now. And Ann knew how to run that website, so she kind of tagged me to be in charge of it to start updating things on it.
She had a way of doing that, didn't she?
Yeah. And I had no idea what I was doing, but I had a notebook with the step-by-step processes that she taught me way back then for taking care of all this stuff. The new website, it's easy. I just go on there and boom, 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 stuff's added and it's done. This other one was a bit more work. But it just shows you, I kept that folder, that notebook for a long time because she was thorough with each step. I'd be on the phone with her and she'd say, now write this part down, right? And so I had everything in there. And it wasn't just the website, there were some other things too. And, as Stephen said, she's missed. She is really missed. We talk about her often. So get out there and get your colonoscopy if you're turning 50, or even if you're over 50 and you've never done it, get out there and get it. Like my doctor says every 10 years, but for some people it might be every 5 years, whatever.
Yeah.
Just get it done.
Yeah. They don't hurt. You're not awake. You can't tell afterwards. The only unpleasant thing about it really is the cleaning out the plumbing the day before.
Yeah.
You got to take the laxatives and drink that gross stuff and run to the bathroom a bunch of times. And that's a drag. Nobody likes to do that. But, keeping yourself healthy and alive is very important. All right. So shout out to Ann. We wish she were here, but she had another birthday and we miss her. So I got one last announcement here. Over at Story and Origin, Evan's a good guy. He stays on top of a lot of stuff that's going on. And he sent me an email today saying that there are now 5 retailers that are offering audiobooks. Now, the thing with audiobooks, which is going to be an important topic with today's guest, Trenton Bennett, is that ACX which is part of Audible, which is owned by Amazon, has had a fairly exclusive run on selling audiobooks. And if you want to sell an audiobook through them, you can collect a higher royalty rate if it's exclusive. So they discourage you from going to other places. And since there haven't been a whole lot of other places that are turning numbers, we've, you know, not really explored those much yet. But Evan says that now Chirp, audiobooks.com, Downpour, Scribd or Scribd, I've heard people pronounce it both ways. It's S-C-R-I-B-D, and Authors Direct. They say that he's saying that all of these are now offering audiobook sales and that there are a couple of more that are supposed to be coming on online pretty soon here. So that's an interesting thing. Now, in this thing note that he sent me, he also sent me links to two pages that are in Story Origin. And these are exciting pages. And I'm thinking of some of our authors like, you know, Robert G. Williscroft, who like to look for promotion opportunities. These two lists are, one is a list of people who have, people or companies who have newsletters that are willing to do promo swaps. Like, for example, you know, we've got our newsletter that you listeners, most of your listeners, I hope, are at least getting every Wednesday morning. And the deal is, if you hook up an arrangement with these people, you can put in your newsletter something that promotes what they're doing, and they'll put something in there of yours in their newsletter. And this list shows all the newsletters, the topics they cover, how many subscribers they have, what their click-through rate is, and whatnot. And that's just a remarkable list. So if any of you listeners are interested in that, shoot us a note. You know, we got a contact form on freshinkgroup.com. And we'll pass this information on to you, or if enough people are interested, we could put it in next week's newsletter too. And the other list that he gave me the link to was people who want to do shared promos. So if you've got some kind of an event or you're running advertising or whatever, and you want to split the cost with somebody or share a booth, share a table or whatnot, then you can go through this list and look for people who are looking to share promo opportunities. And they're not just asking, they're also offering as well. So that's another remarkable list. And a lot of our listeners we know are writers or people who are interested in the publishing industry or other creative industries like music. And I'm sure that, there's always opportunities like that, and we're looking for them. We want to share them with you. And that just fits right in with today's guest.
Yeah, so before we move on to the next thing, there's a couple of things on Twitter that I like to read while they're topical, timely.
Okay.
They're both from Verwayne Greenhoe. He says, great, I am happy to hear about your friend getting sprung. It would be a great time of the year to get out, but after 48 years, any season is a good season to regain your freedom.
Yeah.
And he also said, amen on the colonoscopy. I used to assist doing them years ago, but now they put you down and out. You remember precious little of the procedure, and I agree. I mean, they shot me up with something. I was asleep, and it seemed like 10 minutes later, I woke up to hearing, hey, you're all good to go. You're clean.
Yeah.
Good numbers
like
or whatever.
Would you like a copy of the video? Yeah, my favorite part was they give you a little drink and a snack right afterwards because they know that you didn't eat for the last 24 hours.
I didn't get a little snack or anything, but I went out to lunch. My mother drove me to lunch right after that. We went out to a restaurant, so I was good to go.
Now, we've got a couple of more quick announcements. For those of you familiar with Robert G. Williscroft's Dataless books, we got notification that the biggest distributor in the U.S., which is Ingram, and we always nice with Ingram, is no longer going to distribute books that are retail priced below $4.99. And they sent us a notification that your company publishes some books that are priced below that line. And we couldn't figure out what they were because, you know, we don't price print books that cheaply. And we had to run a list, and then we discovered that the four Dataless, individual Dataless stories published by Robert G. Williscroft were priced $4.95 each. So they were 4 cents under the limit. So we had to republish all four of those books this week, and they are in the process right now. They're supposed to be live on the 4th, which is the day after tomorrow. So sorry, people, if you want to get a copy in print of that now and save 4 cents, get right over there and do it. Otherwise, after tomorrow, they're going up to a whopping $4.99 each for some really fun stories about people who are experimenting with hard shell winged suits, flying with rockets between their legs. And, you know, that just sounds like a lot of fun. And in this series, he goes from experimental to using them in combat. And they're just fun, exciting stories. And pretty soon we're going to be running a promotion and giving away the first one in ebook form. But, you know, the print books are fun to have. So get over there and check those out.
Yeah. And also a former guest and a Fresh Ink Group member, Forrest Robert Stepnowski. He has a Amazon only release, a brand new book of poetry called Broken Beautiful, a poetic reflection of 2020. If you're familiar with Forrest's work, you'll know that these are a lot of personal poems that he writes from personal experience and whatnot, and he's really good at those sorts of things. So, and if you're not familiar with his work, go on out and grab a copy of this book and check it out. He's got a couple of other poetry books as well. And he's got like a one's kind of memoirish as well, but yeah, check it out. Broken Beautiful, a poetic reflection of 2020 by Forrest Robert Stepnowski. You can find the link on the Fresh Ink Group website. Go to the member page, find Forrest's page, and click on that, and it's right there along with his other books as well. So go give that a check.
Now, over on Twitter, Verwayne Greenhoe says that he's gone from exclusive on Audible to being on Chirp. And he's working on two other places right now that he's trying to get into. He says he has 24 audiobooks out now with a goal of taking it up to 27 by September. And his monthly royalties, he says his monthly royalties are far more than 65% from all of his audio stuff.
Wow.
And then he added another note. And then after the rest of our discussion, he added the note, Versed, the wonder drug. You can't remember spit after having Versed.
I think what I had was the stuff that Michael Jackson OD'd on.
Yeah, fentanyl is what they gave me.
No, it wasn't fentanyl. It's that the one he called the milk, magic milk. Oh. Anyway, listeners, if you want to be involved in tonight's show, and we want you to be, just like Verwayne is over there on Twitter, you can get involved that way or via telephone, and here's how.
Call 516-453-9902 right now with your questions or comments for tonight's guest, or post a note on Twitter with hashtag Fresh Ink Group in the body of the tweet, and we'll read it on air. That's 516-453-9902 or hashtag Fresh Ink Group on Twitter.
Call now.
Yeah.
All right.
So what do they do if they miss tonight's show, Beam?
Well, if they miss tonight's show, they can find us in the archives. Where are those archives? They're all over the place. You can't walk without tripping over an archive. So the first place to go to is freshinkgroup.com. Click on the podcast page. Beamweeks.com. Click on the podcast tab. StephenG's.com. Podcast tab. Go over to our YouTube channel. Type in Fresh Ink Group and our channel will pop up, and every episode is over there, as well as book trailers and just cool videos and things that we put up there. And while you're there, if you're not subscribed, click that subscribe button, hit the thumbs up for any videos that you watch. We appreciate that, and it really helps us out. And we are also on Spotify. If you have a Spotify account, doesn't matter if it's the freebie or if it's the premium, just go over there and type Voice of Indie, all one word, and every episode we've ever done of this program will be up there. And I'm working on getting us on, I was supposed to do that this week, but I've been busy doing a whole bunch of other stuff. So Pandora is coming in the future. We'll be on Pandora as well. Right now, those are the five places you can find us.
And if you want to learn about these shows, what's coming up, and get our newsletter, it's very cool because it's full of our latest videos, clips from our audiobooks, links and information about the other websites that Fresh Ink Group runs, and it'll be an announcement about that week's podcast with a bio of the author and a picture and usually some information about his or her books or other work and things like that. So if you've not subscribed to that newsletter, get on that. Go over to freshinkgroup.com, and right on the homepage, scroll down near the bottom and you'll see a place where you can just sign up for the newsletter. Or if you've got somebody who can send you a copy of the newsletter, there's places to subscribe right at the bottom of that as well. So get on that newsletter list so that you can know everything that's going on.
Yeah, and speaking of bio, tonight's guest, let's introduce him. Trenton Bennett is a voice artist with experience in theater, voice acting, and audiobook narration. He is a graduate and mentor of the ACX Masterclass and professional talent at voheroes.com. Trenton Bennett has a home recording studio built in consultation with George the Tech Whittem and is also available for on-location work. Trenton is a detail-oriented individual and will always work with you to set a schedule and stick to it. One of his voiceover works that you may recognize is Robert G. Willicroft's Operation Icebreaker, a Mac McDowell mission. For more information on Trenton and to see more audiobooks featuring him, check out his website at trentonbennett.com. And his bio and links are in our newsletter that we sent out this morning. So you can click on those links and go find those places that quick if you get the newsletter. And with that, welcome to the show, Trenton Bennett.
Hello, what, Trenton.
Hey, Beam. Hey, Stephen. Can you hear me all right?
Yes,
we can.
We can
hear you just fine.
All right. That's great. It's funny. We've gone with more than a month of no rain here in Florida, which is unusual. And about 2 minutes ago, it came down a gully washer. So,
wow.
I got that in my ear, too, and it's kind of nice.
So whereabouts in Florida are you?
I live outside of Tampa in central Florida in a place called Riverview.
Oh, okay. Riverview. I've been
used to live in Fort Myers for a couple of years back in the 80s, and it seemed like it rained every day down there when I lived down there.
Yeah, 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't been getting our afternoon rains this month, and we've been dying for them. So, yeah, we're glad to get it now.
Okay, so you're living in Florida now. Is this where you're originally from?
No, actually, the funny thing is, I was born in Texas. My whole family are Texans, and my parents are the only ones who left. They took me with them. And by the time I was about 11, I had lived in Kansas, Georgia, Kansas again, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and then Kentucky.
Wow.
No Wyoming?
No Wyoming.
What do you got against Wyoming?
Hey, I got a friend who was born and raised in Lander. He's told me some really neat stories. It sounds like a great place to go.
Yeah, we're not hearing the Texas twang in your voice, so I'm guessing you got out of there before that developed.
It runs in the family, and I can do it when I need to. But you know, the other part of it is I lived in Kentucky for a long time, so sometimes I get my Southerns confused a little bit. But yeah, I guess because I lived so many places, I ended up with that general American. And when I was a kid, people used to say, "You sound like a little radio announcer."
Yeah.
So why all the moves? Were you a military brat or father's job? What?
Yeah, it's the latter one. Everybody thinks it's military. My father was climbing the corporate ladder with companies, and some of them relocated. So in the end, when we settled in Kentucky the longest, we had a house there that my parents built, and it was very nice. But then in their later years, they retired to Florida, to Naples, and in order to be with them, because I'm an only child, I moved my family and I down here about 7 years ago.
Wow. Okay. So what kind of kid were you in Kentucky? Were you an outdoor type and you like to get out and do stuff, or were you more bookish indoor?
Little of both, actually, because my father had 7 acres and it was very beautiful. It was kind of nice to go out there in the woods and walk around. But I also was a nerdy kid, very bookish, loved computers, loved reading, loved using my imagination and drawing and that kind of stuff. Looking back now as an adult, I wonder how I had the time to do all the things I did, but I loved reading most of all.
Wow, cool. Well, we're going to roll a commercial now, and we're going to see if our listeners can guess who did the voiceover work on this commercial. This is the Star Child trilogy for Robert G. Willicroft.
I've heard of that.
I've heard of it, too.
Now, the Star Child trilogy by Robert G. Willicroft is complete. In Book 1, Slingshot, 3 scientist engineers reach for the stars as they blend their skills with a host of skilled colleagues to create the world's first space launch loop. A team of young eco-terrorists will go to any length to halt the project,
One woman is determined to scoop the story, reporting events to a watching world. Slingshot ranges from Seattle's financial district to the ocean bottom off Baker Island to the edge of space and across the vast panorama of an equatorial Pacific. It's a love story, a gender bender, and a mystery about a missing aviatrix, a conspiracy, and a true believer. It's about high finance, intrigue, heroism, fanaticism, betrayal, and humanity's surge into outer space. In Book 2, The Starchild Compact, an international team ventures to Saturn's moon Iapetus to verify it really is a derelict starship. They discover the founders, descendants of the starship's builders who arrived in our solar system 150,000 years ago. Together with the founders, the explorers advance founder science with momentous implications for the entire solar system, paving the way for a joint push to the distant reaches of the galaxy. But a Persian caliphate stowaway sabotages the mission, hoping to destroy science that he believes violates Islam. The Starchild Compact blends tomorrow's science with human foibles, fears, beliefs, and political intrigue, speculating on how civilization might develop while traveling on a generational starship, and how modern humans might interact with remnants of that civilization. In Book 3, the Iapetus Federation, besieged Israelis on Earth make their way to Mars as the Federation expands throughout the solar system. While global jihad rages on Earth, putting millions to the sword, the Starchild Institute develops wormhole transportation. But will this new technology be ready in time to rescue all that is left of the United States, the beleaguered Lone Star Conservancy, and remnants of other cultures around the globe? From hand-to-hand combat in the oceans, to battles on Earth's surface, to struggles in interplanetary space, our heroes fight to survive and expand to the far reaches of the universe. Robert G. Williscroft is an adventurer, polar explorer, deep-sea diver, nuclear submariner, scientist, and best-selling, award-winning author. His stories portray the accurate science and precise engineering that appeals to hard science fiction buffs. But the Starchild trilogy is for everyone who loves an epic tale, a grand journey by men and women who loom larger than life as they work, play, and love. Make the Starchild trilogy your own with individual hardcover, softcover, audiobook, and all major ebook editions worldwide, or collect the entire set for one epic journey by Robert G. Williscroft, the Starchild trilogy.
We had a lot of fun making the video for that, which you can find in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube. And we did some cool 3D animation, and we had a lot of fun turning the moon into a spaceship. So if you want to see how we did that, go have a look, and then you can hear Trenton's voiceover again as well.
Wow, whoever did that commercial, hire that guy.
Yeah, I'm telling you. He sounds like he can handle a whole audiobook.
That was fun.
Now, Trenton, what sort of educational background do you have?
Well, I ended up going to a school called Transylvania University. And it's fun to mention that because it is one of the oldest colleges in America. And mostly people say, gosh, how far away is that? Was the flight really difficult? And I'm like, well, it's in Lexington, Kentucky.
Wow. Transylvania, huh?
So what did you study?
I got an art degree and a business administration minor. They were doing a liberal arts program, and I guess as a bookish reader type, I loved that because I had to take other classes, science and history and math. It was a really well-rounded degree, and I enjoyed it.
Oh, that sounds terrific. Yeah, liberal arts degrees can really give you a foundation for all kinds of directions that you can go in life. You add business to that, and it's like, well, then you know how to make some money doing it as well.
Exactly.
So you mentioned that you moved your family. Tell us about your family. You're married. You got kids.
Yesterday was my 30th wedding anniversary.
Wow.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Cool.
We met in college. We got married after we graduated. And I have, with her, I have one child, a daughter, who is 22 years old, she's in college right now. She's actually not the same art degree as me. She's going to be an animator, which is pretty amazing.
Wow, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, an animator house, so you're going to be doing like actual cartoons, or is it like animating book covers, or you know, that kind of stuff?
She actually really loves the classic 2D animation that you think of when you think Walt Disney, you know, not the
yes.
Pixar 3D stuff, which is fine.
Yes,
she has to study
cell animation.
Like me, she has to study a little of everything. And so she's doing 3D and stop motion and stuff, but she wants to end up doing that two-dimensional stuff where you hand draw every cell, and she's actually quite good at it.
Wow.
Yeah, that's kind of almost a dying art, it seems like, because now with, as you mentioned, like the Pixar stuff, that's the big thing nowadays. I see where they've got a lot of these older cartoons that were the cell cartoons, cell animation, and they're redoing them with the Pixar type of CGI stuff. And it just, to me, that's not the same. It, you know, you see,
it's been really interesting and eye-opening to look for it, because I've noticed that there are a lot of times where 2D is still used, not just commercials and stuff, but when you go to those movies and you see the credit sequences, a lot of those are 2D animation, but you can't tell because computers are still a big part of that. And most of what she does is on a computer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, we know what you do for your work. What do you do in your spare time? You've got hobbies? What kind of interests do you have?
Probably the most important thing is you really need to take care of yourself. My sympathies for your loss of your colleague, Anne. I get that. You want to take care of yourself. And that means to be a well-rounded person. For me, I also exercise. And for just over 30 years, I've been doing traditional Japanese karate every single week. It's a style called Shotokan.
Ah.
Ooh. That's impressive.
That's cool. Do you beat people up?
I'm a little old for that, Sonny, but don't mess with me.
Yeah.
So I really love the workout. It's great exercise.
And how did you get into the voice work then?
Well, it's funny. Out of college, I always kind of liked doing goofy voices, which tied into my love of art, and I personally really enjoyed animation. So I guess the apple didn't fall far from the tree with my daughter. But I did a few little things here and there. Like I had a friend who had worked at a television station. I did a couple bits for him, did a radio show for somebody. And finally, later in life, I had an opportunity because I met David H. Lawrence XVII, who runs the website voheroes.com. At the time, I was a little tentative to just dive right in with somebody that I don't know very well. So I took just one of his classes, which was called the ACX Masterclass, and said, I'll start with audiobooks. And it turned out to be a fantastic thing for two reasons. The first is that the class itself is actually really good to teach everybody end-to-end how to get into audiobook narration. But the second is, when I first talked to David, he spent the time to talk to me, ask me questions about what I'd done, a couple of little stage things and such. And then instead of saying, okay, time to write me a check, the man said, okay, well, it sounds like what you need is go get acting lessons. Go do that for a little bit and then come back and talk to me. And I thought, wow, that's really great. And I went through that. I couldn't get formal structured lessons, but I ended up working with community theater, and then I had to leave Kentucky and move away. But it was a fantastic experience, and it helped kind of revitalize my love of performance. And that's when I took the ACX Masterclass and said, hey, I get to be an actor who's all of the characters and the props and the set and the background and even the ambience.
Yeah.
So this isn't just getting in front of a microphone and reading, the text of a book. You're actually getting into the character and bringing the tone, bringing, you know, the ambiance, as you said.
Absolutely. In particular, because most of my clients actually want me to do distinct voices. Some narrators do and some don't, and that's fine, whichever you prefer. But for me, when I get into that character and I try to make them distinct, I do read the book a few times before we get started. I'll get into that later. But I really need to understand why these people are doing what they're doing, what their motivations are, what they feel, in order to better kind of give a performance. And you move in and out of that narrator voice to be those other characters and bring emotion to life. And it's been amazing. I've done readings in a room full of people where I get done, I look up, and they're all on the edge of their seats. And I'm like, wow, I love that.
It's power.
Yeah, that's getting a reaction, and that's what you hope for.
Yeah, I like that community theater experience of yours, too, because a lot of people overlook that. Every community in everywhere's got community theater, local people who are doing plays and shows or things like that. And like we had GM Lupo on the show a couple of months ago, and he got involved in community theater as a writer and then started actually writing plays and getting his stuff performed. It's just an opportunity to be with some good creative people and learn from them and gain some experience, too, even if you're just looking to put some things on a resume. So kudos to you. That's a great path to follow.
Thanks, Stephen. Totally agree. It was such a supportive community. And the funny story behind that is the first play that I got into was a musical. And I thought, oh my gosh, I've not only not really been in a major role on stage, I've been like doing minor things and being set crew and stuff, but I've never sung on stage before. And I got up there and I told there were two directors. There was a musical director and then the play director. And so I told the musical director, I don't know. And she said, well, don't worry about it. Just come, give it a try. And at the very worst, we can put you in the background and you don't sing or you just do group harmonies. And I got there and she was like, oh my gosh, you're fine. You're doing great. And I ended up getting a couple of different roles in that play where I was singing, one of which I was duetting with the lead of the play, the main character. So I was blown away at that. That was such a great positive experience.
I think that's kind of cool too, because it takes you out of your comfort zone and shows you that you're actually capable of doing more than what you yourself thought you were.
That's a great point, Beam. And part of that was I felt like I had a safety net of everybody else around me. We were all in this together. And so it made it less scary to get up in front of a room full of people and do a performance knowing that this is something we all were doing together, a shared experience.
Kind of like the Willendas. You're all in it together. If one of you fall, you're all broken.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well, I have a friend who was a professional singer, and he appeared in some musicals and stuff. And he said that, you know, you start out thinking that you got to be the best singer there is out there, and you're going to have to give that up because you're not always going to be the best singer there is. You just have to go out there and act like you mean it, like you believe in it, and that you're putting everything you got into it. And then you don't have to be the best. You just have to be earnest, and people will accept that. And I think that's probably good advice, and well beyond singing as well, for writers and other creators too. You don't have to shoot for best, just shoot for really good and feel good about what you're doing. And then people will see the best come out of you.
Yeah. And it's interesting you should say that, because I turned out to be a tenor, and there was a young man who in the cast who was also a tenor, and he was kind of mentoring me. And he said, look, the tenor is the great plug and play voice that can do just about everything, but you have to put the energy into it and you have to go big. And that was huge for me. I was like, he's right, because things sound better if I put volume behind them, but then I'm taking that big risk because you're putting a lot of volume into something that could go horribly wrong.
Oh, yeah.
You just have to go for it. Otherwise, it won't succeed. What a neat little metaphor.
Yeah.
A couple more comments here on Twitter from Verwayne Greenhall.
Hey, welcome to the show, Verwayne.
All right.
He says, Transylvania University. What did he study there? Why, bloodletting, of course.
We only took the night classes.
Yes, Count Dracula was a professor there. He also said, he says, Trenton Bennett, you sound like a guy I'd love to hang with on a lazy weekend.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Dr. Helen Burrell says, like Voice of Indy, maybe Trenton Bennett, you should call yourself Voice of Trenton. Impressive voiceover on various projects I listen to.
Great.
So she's familiar with
indeed.
Your work.
That is actually, that's my Twitter handle, at Voice of Trenton, and I've got a Facebook page.
Yep.
There you go.
So what kind of audio?
Thank you so much.
What kind of audiobook projects do you like to take on if you have your druthers? You have a favorite genre, certain things you like to work with, certain authors?
I've been doing the Pokemon approach. I'm trying to collect them all. I've really enjoyed, I guess one of the things that really got me with Robert Willis Croft's Starchild series was that it's hard science fiction, And hard science fiction is the type where the science is more the star, and the performances take kind of a backseat to that from time to time as I'm explaining orbital launch loops or Vasimir engines. I loved reading that as a kid because it fired my imagination. But Willis Croft also threw in some of the Tom Clancy intrigue and some of the Robert Heinlein interpersonal relationships.
Yes.
So that made it more fun. But I've been kind of playing the field here. I've done romance. I've done mystery and suspense. And I really enjoyed, I've done a couple of inspirational stories as well. And I did a novelization of a movie. But I also would really kind of like to do a nonfiction title. I've been coached a little bit in that, and I think it would be fun to take that on, or a self-help book, those kinds of things too, where you get to talk to someone one-on-one.
Yeah, you can be authoritative, or you can just be helpful, friendly, like the neighbor who's come over to help you build something or whatever. That's all kinds of opportunities.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well,
Beam, you want to roll a commercial while you try to remember what you were going to say?
I know what I was going to say. Now, listeners, this is a great opportunity to call in with your questions. You've got a master voiceover artist here. If you're an author and you're looking at getting an audiobook done and you want to know some ins and outs, give us a call, 516-453-9902. That's 516-453-9902. And ask your questions. This is what we're here for.
Yep. Now, this commercial that Beam is about to roll is one that the author, Robert G. Willis Croft, hasn't even heard yet. B. Trenton just recorded this, and Beam dropped the music on it and put this together just a few hours ago. We do have a commercial for the Mac McDowell Mission series on YouTube, but it features the first two books. And we're getting ready to release the third book, Operation Arctic Sting. And I do remember the title this time. Sometime in the next week or so, it looks like is when it'll start appearing at retailers. So we're going to update that commercial and add the third book to it. But for now, we've got an audio featuring voiceover artist extraordinaire Trenton Bennett.
Sweet.
Now, from Fresh Ink Group and best-selling author Robert G. Willis Croft, the Mac McDowell Mission Series. With a security clearance above top secret, Saturation Dive Team Officer in Charge Mac McDowell leads his team into critical Cold War counter-Soviet missions. Watch Mac prove what brave men can achieve under real pressure, the kind that will steal your air and crush the life out of you. In Operation Ivy Bells, it's the summer of 1972 when Mac and his off-the-books deepwater espionage group are conducting a daring undersea wiretapping operation to gather Russian intel and avert world war. Join nuclear submariner Mac McDowell for extreme diving, a battle with giant squid, and more as he risks everything in the most dangerous operation yet. In Operation Icebreaker, Mac McDowell is leading his submarine team for a mission to lay Sosus arrays under the Arctic ice when they clash with a highly automated Alpha-class Soviet submarine. Overwhelmed by mechanical problems, the Soviet crew abandons their sub near Point Barrow, Alaska. The skipper launches DSRV-1 Mystic so Mac and his crew can board the empty sub and gather intelligence. The arrival of an even more advanced Soviet sub leads to breathtaking underwater clashes with the specter of war looming. Will Mac and his crew be sunk by the Soviets, or will they safely return to Alaska where Mac's new love, Kate, anxiously waits? In Operation Arctic Sting, Mac McDowell and his team capture the abandoned Soviet sub. Piloting their prize through the ice pack to the U.S. East Coast, they must evade or confront other Soviet subs trying to recover the ship or sink it. Breathtaking deep-sea clashes erupt, including hand-to-hand combat with Soviet Morskoy Spetsnaz divers under the ice. Too far from Tuthis to escape, the Americans are accosted by a 5-ton orca. Will Mac's ship survive long enough to reach friendly waters, or will the men become just another meal for a deadly whale? The McDowell Mission Series by Robert G. Willis Croft is available worldwide in jacketed hardcovers, paperbacks, ebooks from Kindle to Nook and Kobo and more, plus exclusive audiobook editions with music and sound effect. The Mac McDowell Mission Series is proudly published by Fresh Ink Group. Take a breath and dive in for thrilling submarine adventures in every Mac McDowell mission.
Yeah. Now,
that packs a lot in.
The cool thing is how you can read the excitement and tension into that little 2-minute and 25-second little piece there. So again, listeners, if you're looking, if you're an author and you're looking to have your book turned into an audiobook, this is a guy that knows what he's doing. You got the excitement, you got the attention. And so
I'd be happy to do commercials and promos. I've done that in a multitude of contexts, but I also want to mention, if you pick up one of the books, I'm not going to be reading it that fast. I'll be reading it at a really good pace because audiobooks have a different technique. My favorite thing David had said is you have to give the words time to land in the ears of the listener. You're throwing a lot of information at them, and then they're having to build that picture in their head. So you got to pace yourself a little bit.
Yeah.
No doubt.
That's a good idea. Now, we do have a caller.
Great.
You want to take a call?
Yep.
Awesome.
All right. Hello, caller.
Hi.
Area code 386. You're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, I'm Jill Clark. I think I know Stephen a little bit through email.
Hi, Jill.
Okay. Hi, Jill.
Welcome
Hi, Jill.
To the show.
Hi. Good. I'm sorry, I have a little bit of a cold, but I was interested. I've written a children's poetry book, and each of the poems is what I would call a mini narrative. So each character is different each time. It leans toward the humorous. And I didn't know I'm ready to do an audiobook, and I didn't know if you had ever done anything like that, but you do voices, and pretty much the characters change every poem.
Yeah, actually, I just did a set of three short stories for an author. They were actually some really interesting little small-town stories that had different tones and voices. When it comes to the children's stuff, there's a slightly different pace that you give the kids to let the information land, but also switching voices, that's not really a problem for me. That's something I enjoy doing. The Slingshot novel, the first in the Star Child series, has about 50 distinct characters in it, so that is not a problem at all, Jill.
Wow.
Oh, that's perfect. I'm really excited about that. So we just go to your website, the .com one that you have?
You can email me at trenton@trentonbennett.com, and Bennett has two N's and two T's in it.
Okay.
And like always, can just use the contact form on Fresh Ink Group, and we'll make sure we cook people up, put them in touch with each other.
Oh, there you go.
You guys are awesome.
Now,
thanks.
You know that.
Listeners, Jill Clark is a member of Fresh Ink Group. She came to us a long time ago when we put out our first anthology of short stories. And we put her short, what was that called, Jill? Machete, I think?
It was. And
her short story, Machete.
And they published 2 out of 4 of the series. I hadn't written the 3rd and 4th yet. And I was going to do a graphic novel for that. And when I was listening to you, Trenton, I could just see you doing your audio for a graphic novel.
Ooh.
There's another favorite. I happen to be reading. I'm a little behind in my Batman. I'm reading DC's Rebirth now, like 3 years later.
Okay. All right. Well, you all, I don't want to take up your time. Thank you. I will be getting in touch with you, Trenton.
Thanks for calling in, Jill.
Thanks so much. Really glad to hear it.
Thanks,
Jill.
Right. Thanks so much. Bye-bye. All right.
Now, that commercial that we just played before then, keep in mind that early next week there will be a new version in the Fresh Ink Group channel on YouTube with all the video edited to go with it as well. We were going to shoot for having it done this week, but I have to go out of town for a funeral Friday, so it'll probably be Monday or Tuesday before we get it up. So do watch for that. Right now the commercial with the first two books is on there. Go look at it, but check out the third one. And also keep in mind that third book, we're doing the audiobook for it. And when we do audiobooks, we use a little bit different model. We use the narrator as a hired person so that the author owns all the rights as opposed to sharing royalties, which is the typical ACX arrangement. And we add sound effects and music to them as well. And right now we're doing that audio book for Operation Arctic Sting, a Mac McDowell mission, which Trenton did the read for. And we're up to chapter 6, adding the music and sound effects. So everybody watch for that to be available soon. We're just shamelessly promoting here today. And we don't care.
Well, that video is going to be fun. I like the one you did for Icicle. I think my favorite bit was that little edit you do with the "Who uploaded the cat?"
<It's great>. Now, Trenton, talking about the accents and the dialects, this is something that I've always done, going back to when I was a kid and all through my teens and my early 20s, doing the different accents and things. And I used to use them to do, I'm not going to say I'm ashamed of it because I had a lot of fun doing it, but prank phone calls. And I would call people, and a lot of times I'd call friends and people that knew me, and I'd use these different voices, and it'd take them, you know, 5-10 minutes before they're like, "Is that you? What, man, yeah. What are you doing?" But how did you get into that? Into like with me, with hearing somebody like Rich Little or somebody, you know, in a movie that's doing an accent, you know the actor, it's not his real accent, but then you start working on that accent, and that's how I would do it. Then I'd pick up the phone and make the prank phone call.
That was one of those moments when I was a kid. I got to see Rich Little. He came to my town and performed, and I was blown away watching him, and it just seemed like he was becoming those different people. When you do that, of course, as a kid, I was a mimic, and I loved listening to things on TV, cartoons, comedy, whatever. But as an adult, it's a fantastic skill for an audiobook narrator to have in their toolbox. And for me, I took the accents class. It's actually just accents class, theaccentsclass.com. It's taught by Jim Johnson and Dan O'Day. And Jim Johnson is a linguist, and it's amazing. He breaks down, it's not just that he breaks down the origins of the different sounds when you're trying to do an accent or dialect in the English language, but he also talks about the components that go into it. So, for example, we drill real deep into things like how your mouth is positioned and how certain sounds are made so that you understand that everybody who grew up in a different area, they position their mouths differently when they make sounds. And that's why sometimes when you think you're imitating someone else and they're going, it's not right, and you can't hear the difference, it's because they're doing different things in the way that they shape the words. It was really fascinating and did a whole heck of a lot for my ability, because that particular class, there's all these resources they give you of languages. He literally, Jim Johnson, travels the world and meets with people, interviews them, gets samples, puts lessons together. So when I do a book, if I've got characters that are going to be Russian recently, for example, I'm going to go into those chapters and I'm going to drill on that accent and make sure that I get it really down pat before I start trying to deliver those lines.
Yeah, you mentioned it sounds like a vocal coach for a singer.
Yeah.
They teach you all the different ways to you know, pronounce the words to hold the note. Or what I watch this vocal coach on YouTube all the time, because he does these great tutorials, and he goes into the full, you know, how to hold your mouth and what you're doing with your tongue and what you're doing with the throat muscles or the chest and all that. And a lot of work goes into
very
that.
Very much so. Yeah. The mechanics of it on a lighter version. You mentioned YouTube. I've got a colleague named Matt Haynes who does Haynes Narration. He's on YouTube. And he does a lot of those where he'll do a little cartoon and show where in the mouth he thinks a sound will be. And the difference is he actually goes into the sounds of particular actors. Like he did one on Michael Caine, who's got a unique Cockney-based but very specific accent that's his.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Rich Little, because I was in Las Vegas last month and went to the Tropicana to see Rich Little. 80 years old, hasn't missed a step, sounds every bit as good as he always did. And one of the things that I noticed when I was watching him is that he supplements his voice with gestures and expressions and things like that, which you're not going to hear if it's recorded that way, unless it's a video, obviously. But sometimes I would just close my eyes and it was like, well, he didn't even need all that extra stuff that he's helping paint the picture. It just adds to it. My only criticism of that show was he was doing, you know, W.C. Fields and Dean Martin and Carol Channing, and he really needs to start doing, you know, Billie Eilish and Harry Styles and people that the young people know. But he warned us right up front. He said, hey, if you're under the age of 45, you're not going to know a lot of these people. But it was a fun show, and that man is certainly about as good as you can get at doing the voices.
Wow. That is amazing. I'm so glad to hear that too, because it was such a big deal to me as a kid.
Yeah,
if you're under 45, chances are they don't even know who Rich Little is. Yeah. Or if they're under 45, I mean, they might not even know prank phone calls. Can't they tell through caller ID who's calling?
Yeah.
Back in the day, they couldn't.
When you said that, I thought, come on, Beam, you're showing your age, because now you make a prank phone call, they call you right back and say, what?
They call you right back. Well, you can do the spoof thing. But back in the day, you could dial *67, I think it was, to cover it up. But even going back even further in the 70s, you didn't even need to do that. But, you know, they weren't going to be able to call you back. So you had a lot of fun with it when you were a kid in the 70s.
So Trenton, let's talk about ACX Masterclass. If people who are interested in getting into audiobooks, like you just got a call from Jill Clark, what are their options? What are their next steps? What do they do? How do they go about this other than talking to Fresh Ink Group?
It is literally acxmasterclass.com. And I mention it because even though, as you mentioned earlier in the show, there are a lot of other alternatives for being an audiobook narrator than ACX. The thing about the masterclass itself is, and it's not affiliated with ACX, it is David H. Lawrence the 17th and Dan O'Day. They teach that class as an end-to-end so that anybody who's coming into this, whether you've done a little voiceover or you're just saying, I don't know how to set up my mic, they get you into all of the fundamentals, and then they work on helping you build a profile and get demos. And the amazing thing about it is, like many other graduates of the class, I started landing work before the class was even done. And they said, that's what we're hoping for you to do. You go out there, you look for it, and we're here to help you. So it was this great community after the class. We have a private Facebook group where we can compare notes, ask for help. We can work through our projects together. And it's really exciting because you get to see everybody's career grow. And for me, it was amazing to land those and then realize, this gives me all of the things I need. I can take the training wheels off, and now I can be really good at what I do, and then I can grow out beyond the scope of just ACX projects.
Now, I mentioned earlier that ACX tends to be a shared royalty situation, whereas what we're doing with Fresh Ink Group is we're just hiring narrators and then letting the author own the book. Can you explain about that shared thing and having ACX people produce for you?
Yeah, I'm really glad you gave me a chance to do that, because this is something that a lot of authors have a hard time figuring out. And to be honest, while ACX did a decent job of breaking it up, they didn't really explain it as well. I get a regular author confusion. So I'm going to break it down real quick for you. The first one that ACX does is called Royalty Share. And the idea behind it is the narrator and the author, they get 50-50 of whatever comes from the audiobook. They split the royalties, and that's why they call it royalty share. Then there's the other nature of it, which is more like what you're doing, Stephen, which is when I deliver audio to you, you pay me per finished hour, or PFH. And what that means is if I give you an hour of audio, it doesn't matter if it took me an hour and 10 minutes or 4 hours or five, because it's you actually have a lot of work you have to do. The point is, when I hand you an hour of finished audio, that's the rate you pay me per finished hour. So somewhere between those two is a bit called the hybrid stipend. And the idea behind the hybrid stipend is, if you weren't sure that royalties were really going to be great for this book, you really weren't quite clear that you wanted to do it, but you wanted to do something to help the narrator out and kind of give them a little bit of an extra incentive, you'd say, look, we'll do a royalty share, and I'm also going to give you a flat payment. And it's not necessarily a per finished hour rate. I'm going to give you a chunk of money. We'll split the royalties, and we go from there. The hybrid stipend then got renamed in ACX to Royalty Share Plus. So when you see Royalty Share and Royalty Share Plus, the plus means I'm giving you a royalty share and a little extra. And it's the kind of thing that you end up negotiating with the rights holder, whether that's the author or Fresh Ink Group or any other publisher.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you wanted a particular narrator, that plus, it might be what the incentive is to get that person interested in your project, I would assume.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if Stephen King approaches an audiobook narrator and says, I'd like you to do my new story, there's a lot of narrators who go, absolutely, sure, yes, sir.
Yeah.
But if you're not yet at Stephen King's level as far as your exposure and your audience and your sales growth, but you really want a high caliber audiobook narrator, you might need to do that to try to kind of give them an incentive.
And I think probably one of the most attractive parts about the royalty share is that it minimizes the upfront cost for the author who wants to get into that.
Yes, exactly. That also makes it a little bit easier because I do encourage people who are writers who are thinking of getting into audiobooks to go for it because that market is it's still growing, it's still booming, and it's worthwhile. It isn't competing with your book. It's growing your book into another space.
Yes.
And part of the reason I say that is because royalty share makes it so much easier. You don't have to throw out a big amount of money. You don't have to have $200 per finished hour, but you probably will have to have something to try to sweeten the deal depending on what kind of a narrator you want to land.
Yeah, that's
but
a lot
everybody's
to think
negotiable,
about.
Of course.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, talking about not competing with your own book, I mean, you want this out there, you know, in as many different outlets as possible. And I think, you know, with the audiobooks, I mean, that's the big thing, the big growth industry right now.
Fastest growing segment in the entire publishing industry right
now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's a lot of people who don't actually read books. They only listen to books. They listen to them in the car.
Yeah.
On the job, wherever.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's another piece to that I wanted to mention that not everybody's aware of. It's twofold. The first is a trend called immersive reading. There are some people that like to listen to the audiobook while they're reading along to it.
That's me.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then
I
there's
like
other people who do that to help them. Sometimes it's because they want to kind of hone their English pronunciation, or sometimes it's simply because they have difficulty reading and they need help. And I love to think that I'm helping someone who's struggling with reading if they've got the book and they're listening to me. That's fantastic.
Yeah, following along. That's a good way to learn how to read. I used to watch this show, and it's not on anymore. That's why I'm not watching it anymore. It was a series, and I think they did – I'm thinking it was three seasons. It might have only been two, but it was called Lodge 49. And it was on AMC, and it was one of the stars of it was Wyatt Russell, Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn's son.
Oh.
And there was one of the characters on there, this guy every week when he was driving to work or driving to wherever was listening to an audiobook. This guy, the character, he was addicted to audiobooks, and this is how he knocked out books, you know, left and right. And there were some scenes where he was, you know, really touting these audiobooks. And I always thought, and grab that, throw that in a video, and we can use that as a commercial.
Yeah,
there are a lot of people like that, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it was so much so that it made it into a television program. So now,
I've heard a couple people complain, with 2020, I don't have a commute anymore, so I'm behind on my audiobook.
Yeah. Now, listeners, we are running a little bit long today, but we've got some good stuff here, and we got some more questions for Trenton. So if you're interested in audiobooks, hang with us a little bit longer.
Yeah, and if you want to throw in a quick question, 516-453-9902. Now, Trenton, you have your own studio, a home studio, which, you know, back in the day I was in a rock band, a heavy metal band in the 80s, and we had a little set up studio in the garage, but it wasn't anything, you know, that you're going to record an album off of or anything professional. Tell us a little bit about your studio here. How did this come about?
Yeah, it is a very different approach than for voiceover than it is for music for a lot of different considerations. Like you say, when you have multiple musicians playing, if you're trying to record, you may need to isolate them and so on. I won't get into the details of that, but for a voice, you can do a lot to begin with before you have the ability to make your own studio. But for me, I did a lot of research and learned about acoustics and specifically what it is about a voiceover studio that's different. And I joined a couple of groups on Facebook. One of them is called Voiceover Artist and Booth Building. And they have a whole bunch of people with all sorts of information, diagrams, posts, and tips. And during that time, I also asked some of my favorite colleagues, who do you go with? And they all said George Whittam. And I looked up George. His website is George the Tech. You can look him up in Google. It's easy to find. But George is very good at what he does, and he consults, so you don't necessarily have to fly him in. And George knew I was pretty good with a hammer and nails, and I could take directions, and I understood the science behind it. So we did all of the things where I tell him, here's how big the room is, here's what I'm trying to do, here's mostly how I record, here's the software I use, the mic stand, and all of that. And once I gave him all those details and drew a couple diagrams for him, he helped me figure out how to build and place acoustic panels and acoustically treat the room. I won't get too far into the nerdy details, but the gist of it is when sound is bouncing around in a room, like if you stand in an empty room and clap your hands, you'll hear that hand clap bounce around everywhere and reverberate all over the place. And you don't want that when you're recording because it makes your voice sound harsh and flat. You want something that'll actually catch the richness of what's coming out of your mouth and your sound without any of those acoustic problems. So we tuned the room and carefully positioned everything in it. And it included some domestic items, like I've got a couple of bookshelves. He said, oh, yeah, absolutely. Put those on the back wall. All those sorts of tips were worth every penny, and George did not charge like a massive amount of money. If you go on his website, it's not very expensive to talk to him, and he'll even give you these like custom production chains, which if you do your own engineering, you know what I'm talking about. But he'll do things to help you and give you the information you need, and he'll do anything from – like he did with me, tell me how to build it, to actually show up on site and do the work for you. I have a video, by the way, on YouTube of how I built my studio so other people could figure out how to build their own panels and also how I hung them.
Ooh, terrific. Then the name of that video, how do they search for it?
That's let me get back to you on that.
Okay.
Let me go to
also,
YouTube real quick.
Also, listeners,
and
if you're interested.
The name is.
It is on my channel. I have a YouTube channel as Trenton Bennett.
Okay. And if you're interested in George the Tech Whittem, the link to him is right in the bio in today's newsletter. So get back to that newsletter again. We're trying to fill that newsletter with good, helpful information and links and whatnot. And George sounds like a terrific resource. Thanks for bringing that up for us.
Here we go. Yeah. Studio Build DIY by voice talent Trenton Bennett.
Studio Build DIY. Way. Ah, yeah, I've heard him before. So, Trenton, can you give us some examples of which audiobooks you've done, any that stand out, various styles, any that might have won awards or anything?
Yeah, actually, there's an award, the Saba Awards. It's kind of new. They did this last year. I was nominated for a Saba Award for the story Call to Love by Mary Falcons, and I really enjoyed working on that story. It was a romance with a Christian theme to it, and the main characters are Tracy Cassidy, a nurse who's a very self-reliant cop.
Getting my characters mixed here. Hold on.
So we have a nurse who's very self-reliant, and she's dealing with her own life and wanting to create a new life away from her family out on her own. But she's also kind of fallen for this guy who's a cop with a son, and he's a little bit bitter from the former relationship he has. He has some emotional baggage that he has to get rid of. And the two of them are at odds in a way that's really interesting to me, but also the way that Mary Falcons wrote, I felt like I was in those scenes. Having been displaced to the South and into Florida, it really felt neat to know, oh, I know that area. The way she's describing fall, I remember what that was like. I don't have fall down here anymore. It was a lot of fun to do.
I remember that. The 2 years I was in Florida, there was no fall, there was no winter. It was just spring and then summer.
Oh, and there's
yeah,
a season
you open your
bugs.
Windows in October, and then you close them again in March.
Yeah. And that season called bugs always bothers me.
Yeah, bugs.
Bugs.
I did that.
Challenges?
I also did Rust by Corbin Burnson.
Oh, yeah.
Corbin Burnson is an actor who also created this movie and directed it. And when he did the novel, I was lucky enough to be asked to do the audiobook for that. And so I was very careful to watch the movie and take the notes from the movie. And some of these characters, some of their performances and such, try to roll that in without making it sound like I'm trying to take for take do the movie, but give that same feel, the same intention behind all of the acting.
Interesting. Yeah. Corbin Burnson, yeah, I've seen him in a bunch of stuff. I used, of course, L.A. Law, I used to watch that pretty faithfully back in the 80s.
Showing your age again.
Yeah, I know.
There you go.
L.A. Law was a TV show, kids.
Yeah.
I also did a comedy that I really enjoyed because it was written in the form of a stage play. It's called June Cleaver, Sexual Deviant,
yeah,
by Benjamin Smith. And Benjamin Smith is a clever man. His writing is brilliant. It was neat to do because I'm reading a play that he published as a book that could be performed as a play, but my performance of it as a one-man act was to try to mix audiobook narration where I'm telling a story with the comedic timing that comes from being on stage. And that was kind of a fun challenge because in my mind, when I'm reading a book, I feel like I'm there. But when we're reading a play, I'm imagining a stage with actors and those kinds of inflections and language. It was very different in my mind as I performed it because it was an entirely different platform that it was designed for. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Now I just looked over
on to do Ward Cleaver.
Yeah. I just looked over on Amazon, and if you just go to the search bar and search Trenton Bennett, the books he's audio books he just talked about come up. So it's easy to find what other Trenton Bennett books are out there as well.
Very cool.
Yeah. The way you described that, Trenton, your approach to this, you know, Stephen and I are both writers and we write these stories and we have an approach. And you were talking about picturing people on a stage and all that. When I'm writing, I tend to picture it almost as a movie scene. It's playing out in my head and trying to capture that whole vibe. Hearing the way you do this for a audiobook, I mean, there's so many different aspects to the writing and reading and audiobook creation. It's amazing.
Yes, oh my gosh, I did Flowers from Afghanistan by Susie Parrish, and I know exactly what you mean because that was a warm and inspirational story, and it was very emotional. I would love to see that made into a movie because it really felt that way as I was reading that out loud. It just, the whole thing felt like this amazing movie that would leave you just emotionally drained and kind of joyful at the end.
Interesting.
Yeah. So what are you working on now?
Well, last week I did three short stories for Mark Sean Orr. He is, he's in Indiana. He's a photographer and a writer, and he's very talented in both areas. And the fun part of it is because he's a member of the local genealogical society, one of the stories I did was a write-up, an article from the late 1800s that he had kind of just slightly edited a bit for clarity. And that was fun to do. And the other was a retelling of the old hook hand story, which if you're American, you probably know this. It's an urban legend. If you're not, you might not. But the story, the gist of it is
a
young couple out in the middle of nowhere attacked by the local monster that has a hook for a hand.
Mm. Yeah, I remember that one when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Those are not out yet. I'm not sure where those are going to end up eventually, but I do know that the first story about the hook hand is on YouTube right now, and it's called The Legend of Monkey Jack by Mark Sean Orr, O-R-R.
Hmm.
But yeah, you can listen to me doing The Legend of Monkey Jack out there on YouTube.
Cool. That sounds like fun.
So before we run out of time, do you have any advice to authors looking to make that jump over into audio, getting an audio book of their work?
Yeah, I absolutely will say a couple of things. The first off is that there's absolutely a huge potential here for your book to become an audiobook. There's a lot to be gained and very little risk, very little to lose, as we mentioned with royalty share. But secondly, when you're looking for a narrator, you need to find somebody who wants to take care of you. Somebody, they don't just have the talent and the skills like I do, but also they care about your work and they try to do what they can to have a hand in promoting it, like I've done here for Fresh Ink Group with some of the voiceovers for the commercials and such. I'm not saying that they should be doing stuff on the side. What I'm saying is these people should be working with you together on the project and it should be interactive. Performer, the writer will always have a voice in their head that's not going to be a perfect matchup to what I'm speaking into the mic. So you have to kind of learn to do a little give and take. But a good narrator is going to do like me and read the story a couple of times before going into it. I don't want to get too long-winded here, folks, but I should mention Every time I read the story, I do a quick read where I'm looking for speed bumps. Are there names I might not know how to pronounce? Are there bits in foreign languages or accents that I'm going to need to either find the pronunciations or drill on the accent? Then my second read is where I do the whole, okay, now I'm really reading the story. Who are these people? What are their motivations? Why are they doing that? And I say this for an author because that means that a good narrator is going to say, they're not going to say yes right away. They're probably going to say, let me see the manuscript, because they want to look through it and make sure it's a good fit. They want to understand it. And they also want to see if there's any speed bumps in there where they go, oh, I definitely couldn't do that, so I'm going to have to pass on this.
Yeah, I would think you'd probably see some manuscripts that are, you know, bad sentence structure and things like that. And it's kind of hard to read those kinds of things when you start a sentence one direction and it goes another or doesn't go anywhere, just ends or whatever. And so, yeah, I would definitely want to make sure that the person I'm working with is paying attention to my writing style, understands it, and then communicate that. You can hear
exactly, Stephen. That's also a very good point, too. I have had very few that aren't well written, but there are times when you go, okay, I'm not picking up the rhythm, the cadence of this one. I'm not really going to be able to read this particular style.
Yeah. Now, we'd like to ask you to read a sample. We're going to play one last commercial real quick and warn you that when we come back, we're hoping that you'll read us a sample. Beam, how about audiobook commercial?
All righty, go for it.
Multimedia publisher Fresh Ink Group is now producing audiobooks and videobooks. Publish your book and discover great books by Fresh Ink Group authors, always available in hardcover, softcover, and all ebook formats, and now expanding into audio and videobooks. Fresh Ink Group. Just wait till you hear what's next.
That was a long one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what we call
books.
A stinger.
We do have some plans coming up for adding video to some audio books. We're starting with like audio short stories so that we can visualize those as well. But that's on the horizon. We're still working in that direction. But Trenton, could you read us a sample?
I'm going to give you a little bit from the story The Revival by Mark Sean Orr. This is going to be about 2, maybe 3 minutes tops.
Okay.
But this is a short story that I recently did that'll be coming out soon, and it is a fun, kind of fictional, kind of based on a true story of his great-grandfather from the late 1800s, and he's telling this story in small-town Indiana, Cadiz, Indiana, to be specific. All right, here we go, folks. There we sat in the stifling shade of the tent, not so much as a stir of a breeze. Women were fanning themselves with the pamphlets the Morris girls at the entrance of the tent were passing out. Each program displayed a crudely drawn lighthouse on the cover of its 2-page entirety. Big, bold letters on the program's front and signs outside the tent proclaimed this sermon to be the Lighthouse Beacon in the Storm Revival, Cadiz, Indiana, August 13th through 19th in the year of our Lord, 1890. Inside the pamphlet, the masses were invited to come to sing the praises of God and fight the treachery of Satan. Pop somehow managed to get us the last folding chairs left empty in the sweltering makeshift tent church in the show altar's meadow. As I looked down at my Sunday shoes, I thought, this grass will never grow back. And this is only the 5th day of Reverend Morris's 7-day revival. 2 more days of this, and there'll be nothing but dried up dirt and dust. I reckon passing by Showalter's Meadow for the rest of the summer will be a reminder of how thankful we are that the summer revival had come and gone. Not that I'm again God or revivals, mind you. It's just the heat and the crowd that gets to me, and the shouting and repenting. Mostly the shouting and repenting. It's so hot this year. Hotter than most August days, and that's saying something. It's so hot this year, I'm not sure even God will show up for the Reverend Morris's annual revival. I'm not sure what transpires at these revivals, but they tend to make normal people act peculiar. It must be something about the atmosphere and the knowing of the past history of heated and fiery sermons. A mix of anxiousness, obligation, and terror prevails during and prior to the seven-day event each year. Part of the Reverend's followers arrived in each town a week before to erect the tent and get the locals riled up. These revivals are attended en masse with people coming from surrounding counties, and some as far away as Ohio, Kentucky, and Illinois. Throughout Henry County, there are few who are at home during revival meetings. Businesses are deserted, and all other activities cease during each meeting. So, here we sit, awaiting the unknown. What will happen this year is anyone's guess, but no one is expecting anything less than a deeply religious experience. The end.
I felt right. The heat.
Yeah. All right. So, Trenton, where can people contact you that want to get a hold of you?
I am always out there on Facebook as Voice of Trenton, and I am also at TrentonBennett.com, which makes the email real easy to remember because it's Trenton@TrentonBennett.com. I try really hard to keep up with Twitter messages at Voice of Trenton. I'm not as speedy on those, but there you go. Facebook, Twitter, my email, and my website.
And of course, contact Fresh Ink Group. We got a contact form right on the website, and we'll make sure we can connect you with Trenton and you can get moving on your favorite projects. Thanks for coming today, Trenton. We had a lot of fun, and I hope our listeners learned a lot.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been great. Beam, Stephen, this has been a lot of fun, and I am certainly glad to be here.
All right. Thanks a lot. Yeah. Now, listeners, if you missed any of these shows that we do, if you missed this one, you're not hearing my voice right now anyway. you will if you look in the archive. Find us at freshinkgroup.com, beamweeks.com, stephengees.com, and all three of those websites. Just go to the podcast tab, and you'll find every episode there. You can find us on YouTube. Go over to YouTube, type in Fresh Ink Group, find our page, and you can find every episode there, plus the book trailers and other stuff. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button if you haven't subscribed yet. And also on Spotify, just go to Spotify, type in Voice of Indy, all one word, and every episode is there.
Now, make sure you subscribe to the newsletter so you learn about these podcasts and see our latest videos and what's going on with projects, even including Trenton now. And if you're not already a subscriber, you can find it on the homepage down near the bottom at freshinkgroup.com. If you are, then go ahead and forward today's email newsletter to somebody, because there's links right in that newsletter for subscribing in the future as well. So who we got next week, Beam?
Next week, we have author and pastor Lanny Richmond, who also happens to be my uncle. He's written a couple of books that Fresh Ink Group has published, and we'll be talking about his life and his books.
And then after that, we have Texas author Jan Sykes. She's a musician and an author, and she's doing a whole lot of things out there with her website that are very interesting. She has a lot of great books, great stories. We're looking forward to talking to her. And then the week after that, we have the Collinses scheduled. That's Stephanie Collins and her daughter, Ellie Collins. Stephanie has the best-selling book, When Angels Fly. And her daughter, Ellie, we've published her Greek mythology series that she wrote when she was 11, 12, and 13 years old, chapter books aimed at teenagers, for which we have two audiobooks, and we're in the process of getting ready to work on the third one for that, too. So that's the Collinses the week after. Thanks again, Trenton. Thanks for my co-host, Beam Weeks. And I've had a lot of fun. I just hope my wrens didn't get too wet out there.
See y'all next week, everybody.
Thanks everybody. Bye.
Bye.
You've been a part of Voice of Indy, a production of Fresh Ink Group. Spread the word, support our guests, then find us at freshinkgroup.com and be sure to hashtag Fresh Ink Group.